Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Mike Stone, who is SVP of marketing for Airship, formerly known as Urban Airship, and a longtime innovator in mobile marketing with an emphasis on push notifications and other growing areas. So we talked to Mike from our studio in San Francisco about that journey and what we can all learn from that. So here's our discussion with Mike Stone. So Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, great. Thanks to be here, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we have a lot to talk about, including kind of diving deeper into some of those things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with a present. So tell us a bit about yourself and about Airship for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, sure. So, for Airship, as you said, we are a mobile marketing platform, recognized by many spots as sort of the leading mobile marketing platform in the industry. We've been around, we are just coming up on our 10-year anniversary, so really pioneered that whole idea for push notifications, so that stuff that pops up on your lock screen and lets you know when there's a new news article or if your gate's changed or if your pizza's ready to be picked up or whatever. All of those notifications is really something that we pioneered and have built a great deal on from there, and now are really about trying to create effective real-time engagement across any type of channel. So we've since added, you know, push notifications, in-app notifications, SMS, mobile wallet, email, many ways that we can go out and contact and reach to a customer in whichever way is most convenient for them, and then make sure that all of those channels kind of sing together in harmony and don't become the cacophony of pop-ups that sometimes make our phones uncomfortable to use. So we are out there not just providing the channels, we're trying to help companies use them better for all of our benefit.
That's great. And there's a lot there we can sink our teeth into in terms of like what differentiates Airship, some of the tactical stuff, and then also just the macro environment, like how all the things that you guys are doing and have been doing over the last 10 years has kind of evolved and how it's kind of coexisting with today's environment. But before we do that, as we like to do on this show, we're going to hit the rewind button and kind of find out a little bit more about you. So tell us about kind of how you got into all of this, even going back to kind of the beginning of your career. Like what's the path that brought you to today, and what's like the, you know, the Mike Stone superhero backstory?
Yeah, well, that's probably overstating it. I'd love to say that there was some grand plan that I could tell everyone to follow, but basically I was born and raised in the Bay Area. And so I grew up and when tech was, came into its being, and from have been doing marketing for technology products for over 25 years, just sort of by accident of being born here. Started really early with Regis McKenna Inc. So Jeff Moore writing the Crossing the Chasm books and all that stuff. So I got to actually be in the workshop with him and a few other folks when he was working on Inside the Tornado. And doing that early sort of technology marketing strategy stuff and bowling pin models and technology adoption lifecycle. It was a great opportunity to start out, you know, young, working on projects for major companies that were looking to implement those strategies for the products that they were coming up with. And this was way back in the day. It's been interesting coming up from a point where I was doing initial positioning for client server architectures and OS2 when that was a new thing.
Wow. Yeah.
So came up from that and just have been then, you know, it's been a nice long career working for companies like HP and PeopleSoft and Oracle and into Salesforce for 4 or 5 years.
Nice.
And then spent 5 years or more like 8 years as an independent consultant, just working with all types, probably 30 different companies, basically going in, generally earlier growth stage and helping them evaluate the best markets to sell their technology into and what the best story was and what their best positioning and differentiation factors were, and then taking that out to their field and helping them sort of sort out the best ways to go and the best ways to go to market. So that was a really great experience, just having worked with so many different technologies, selling into very different markets and companies, frankly, with very different strengths and weaknesses internally, and trying to figure out the best solution sort of over and over again. And then, now I find myself running the show at Airship. So I'm really loving it here. It's a great, great company and great opportunity, and really kind of pulls together all the stuff that I think I've done for the past couple of decades.
Yeah, that's great. And we actually have the Bay Area in common, although I'm not from here as you are. But mm-hmm. that brings up another kind of existential question. You know, I've been here. I came out, I'm from the East Coast, came to the Bay Area to go to college in the late 90s. And I've actually lived here ever since. So I've lived in California longer than where I'm from. So when people mm-hmm. ask me where I'm from, it's just kind of this, I don't know, I guess it's you say where you're from originally, but, I've been here longer than the place where I'm from.
no kidding. Well, then it becomes home, sort of, right?
Yeah, it does.
And you've seen all the change then since the 90s, so it's it's almost unrecognizable since when you arrived anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, and most of that time, or actually most of it has been in San Francisco where I am now, but before that, in the South Bay, various parts of the peninsula. So let's get into now kind of more about Airship.
Sure.
You described it well already. To put more color behind that, I'm wondering, what are some of the clients you're working with? How are you serving them? Any kind of, mini case studies or even kind of KPIs that you often point to give more color around the value that you're adding, particularly in some of those areas you mentioned, like the specialization in push notifications or any of those other areas you're kind of getting into to kind of broaden the product set?
Sure. There's lots of... lots of stuff that we work on and different types of customers. So and it really, I mean, that's one of the things that I love so much about this job is that the different customers that we work with and the very different use cases. So we work with, a lot of airlines, for instance. So we've mm-hmm. got, Alaska and Hawaiian and a lot more that we can't mention by name.
Sure.
But they're, so that's pretty easy to imagine, sort of sending, sending
travel
SMS.
Alerts. Makes sense.
Exactly.
It's a good value exchange for the user.
Yeah, and the boarding pass, actually. So the pass, when you download that boarding pass, it's actually, we create that for many airlines, which mm-hmm. is great because, the solutions that they used to have, the older first generation of those boarding passes didn't update with things like gate change information. They would stay static. So they would, cause actually misinformation. So we've got a much better system that allows those passes to be updated, with changes in information. And then you can push off of the pass, right? So even people that aren't opted in, if they've got that boarding pass, the airline can be assured that everybody that has the boarding pass gets a notification regardless of whether they're opted in to mobile notifications. So, so there's a lot of great stuff that we do there with the airlines to really, the day of travel experience is a big thing. And then they're also interested in how do they build out and make their loyalty programs more effective, using those types of notifications for upgrades and availability to special things. So that's, one case. AMC Theaters is a really fun one, sort of they've found that they've really grown their business for the sort of the full theater experience by enabling people to order food and things like that ahead of time, making offers to them when they have purchased an online ticket and saying, hey, you want to order some popcorn or some special stuff and just pick it up when you get here, to kind of and then help them find their seats and sort of streamline that whole theater experience. Got things like American Eagle Outfitters. We've worked with them a lot in terms of building engagement for their loyalty programs. So that's been really, really great, really interesting stuff. Companies like AccuWeather, sending them updates on obviously in weather changes and that sort of thing in a very targeted way, regionally. companies like BBC. And over in Europe, like updates on if there's particular topics you're interested in, there's a new story that's come out, making sure that people are aware of the things that they're interested in. So, a very targeted, outreach for that. But also, media is interesting because they're also really interested in speed, right?
Yep.
They want to get that notification out there first so that you click on their headline. Exactly. Because there's going to be five of them coming out and they track very carefully whose notification hits the lock screens first. So that's you have a boost service that's actually really a fast lane that ensures that our notifications get to the top most quickly.
Yeah, those all make sense. So let's talk about push notifications in general for those unfamiliar, because I think there's a lot of interesting dynamics. And it can really be a great tool to kind of work against what is one of the biggest challenges in the mobile world, and especially with mobile apps, which is retention and frequency. The retention and active usage just kind of plummets in a lot of cases, and there's a lot of competition and limited screen real estate. So this is a way to meet users halfway outside of the app, you know, at the kind of OS or home screen level. So I think it has all of those advantages, but also some challenges. As you pointed out, in some cases, an opt-in is required. So what are kind of some of the tactics that you use or you espouse to really kind of prove that value exchange? Because I think in a lot of cases, it's about that value exchange that is perceived by the user so that they opt in. And in some cases, it probably comes down to the content itself, like things that are inherently conducive to a push message. You just gave some great examples, like people want that boarding pass or that breaking news or that weather alert. So part of it's the content, part of it's probably the structure and the tactic. So what are you guys kind of doing there to differentiate with all of the above?
I would say, so one is, we have, since we've been doing this for 10 years, I think one of the things that's really different about Airship is the expertise we have. We've worked with many, many global brands. So our customer base, we've got over 1,500 global brands, and they are all names that everybody knows. And we've worked with many of them for 5, 6, 7 years, right? And you can imagine the number of different technology shifts and behavior and expectations and concerns around privacy and new devices and touch points that have all happened. And so we've walked a lot of brands and work very closely with these brands and navigating these shifts. And the one thing that I think is really great is that there's things about the technology, but I'm going to open with sort of the staff, like the folks that work with our clients, our professional services organization and so forth, are really thoughtful. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot we can do to technically address the opt-in issue, but it really starts with being thoughtful about providing value to the customer and you know, being very clear when they open the application, like, these are the types of things that will push you to, you know, add to enhance your experience, and there's going to be real value there. So I think it really starts with, you know, being thoughtful about what you're using push for, being restrictive in terms of just, you know, carpet bombing your user with a lot of notifications and saying, this is the value here. But then, you know, from then on, we can work with companies, because there's, as I, you know, mentioned with the wallet pass, there's many ways to reach out to customers. So, you know, first is being thoughtful and clear about what the value of those updates and notifications is going to be when the person first signs up. But then there's other ways for folks that have not opted in. You can actually do in-app notifications, right? So that push off the app itself to sort of remind people, like, I noticed you're using this new feature, or I noticed you've used us, you know, several times this week. You might consider opting into the push notification so that you can be made aware of X or Y events or offers, and then using an in-app notification to get people to opt in to
at the OS level.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but it's all, to me, it's all about, you know, being thoughtful about how you use it, and being clear to the customer about what the value of that notification is going to be, because people are, like you said, there's a tremendous, you know, war for real estate on the phone, and even more so now on the lock screen. And so, you know, to the folks that are going to stay opted in, I love, you know, getting it, but there's definitely, you know, a difference between when somebody's over pinging you with just pure, you know, blatant marketing stuff, or whether they're actually doing something that's targeted to your interests or what you're doing at the time. Or is particularly helpful based on, you know, how you're using the application or something you're trying to accomplish. If you push me information about that, I'm very happy about it, and I'll go tell my friends that this is a great app. But so it's part of it's being thoughtful and guiding our customers in terms of the best way to do that, but also the ability to use different channels, you know, in-app push, wallet push, also like message center within an app is another thing we do. You know, sort of creates like an email inbox within your app so that the pushes have a place to live. So if you see them pop up, but you don't have time to look at them now, you can go look at them later, and maybe there's something in there that's going to convince you that you should opt in. So there's a number of ways that we work with our customers to drive that.
Absolutely. And the The point about being thoughtful, I think, is important, especially today, because I think everyone's guard is up in the age of robocalls. So just that kind of message fatigue, call fatigue, all of that, I think is very important. So we're actually going to get into a lot of that in terms of, you know, how you're kind of coexisting in the current environment, how the environment has changed over the last 10 years. But first, we're going to pause for a commercial break. So when we come back, more with Mike Stone. Hi everyone, this is Mike Bullen, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Mike Stone. So Mike, before the break, we were talking about how Airship is kind of operating and forming kind of strategies and tactics around kind of the current environment, consumers, receptivity to messaging, being thoughtful about what you're sending and the tactics behind doing that. Let's also kind of go back in time and talk about how things have changed leading up to this point, because I want to also acknowledge that Airship just passed the 10-year mark as a company. So congrats on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So within that time, you know, what's the evolution look like? We've seen such transformation. You mentioned that kind of transformation in the Valley before, but like with respect to like hardware capability, like within that time, that's been essentially the smartphone era. Cultural factors, how people are sensitive to messaging or not. So how has that environment changed, and what are you kind of doing today? The company is obviously very adaptive, and in like natural selection terms, it's survival and thriving in this environment says a lot about kind of living through all those shifts.
Yes.
So what do you point to as that like adaptability?
Well, so I would say, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think that the one and the same is that I think the company has been very adaptive and very nimble, and has listened very careful. We've been, you know, very fortunate to have worked with some great customers and had some great partnerships that really helped guide us and keep us ahead of what we needed to do as a technology company, to therefore keep our customers ahead of the changes that were going on in the market among their customer base. So the adaptability thing, I think, is a great theme, because it's not just Urban Airship that's been, or Airship, or Urban Airship historically, and now Airship, that was, you know, being adaptable. It was really providing adaptability to our customers themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's kept us ahead of the side. You know, so it's like anybody I think who says that they can, you know, predict in 2 years what the biggest channels are going to be for, you know, for consumption of information, is just like, I wouldn't trust them.
Right.
It's just way too hard to predict, like, what's going to happen with wearables. You know, is the Tesla screen going to be the next great piece of real estate? What are people going to really allow in terms of, you know, the smart speakers and the Alexa, you know, home?
Hearables, like, AirPods too. I mean, you see more and more hearables out there.
Right. Yeah. And as you mentioned, and I think it's a really intelligent way to look at it, that there's two dimensions of it. One is just the overall proliferation of devices and the channels that are attached to them. But there's also that other much more difficult thing dimension to suss out, is what consumers are
cultural.
Willing. Yeah. What are they willing to do? Like, and not just what they like to use, like whether or not it's going to be Google Glass or the Snap Glasses that don't really catch on, you know, or something else. Like, the devices is one thing, but it's also, once they're there, like, where's that line of creepy versus helpful? And what are people allowing you to do? I mean, because there's lots of stuff I think that we could do. But I think it's really, really important to consider, like, where are the boundaries in terms of what people think. And historically, I think, from a technology standpoint, we have really, I think, smartly architected the platform to be as malleable as possible, you know, to have APIs to that could quickly, you know, incorporate new devices and channels as they emerge. You know, but also, you know, provide, you know, a great deal of data back to the user so they can sort of see, like, how are people actually using this stuff and then modify their programs and campaigns to take that, you know, real-time information into account so that they understand what types of, you know, messages and what types of timing, what cadence, what, you know, frequency, what time of day, you know, what types of devices are folks really responding to and where are they pushing back and allowing them to steer their mobile programs with much more precision than they could with, you know, just the data that they'd be capturing in a Marketo or their CRM system. So that's been a big, you know, thing for us historically has been, you know, started with push and then have added additional, you know, channels along the way as we've gotten more and more feedback from customers that they wanted us to provide channels. But overall, it was really providing, you know, a three-tiered platform with this ability to incorporate channels on the top. And then in the middle, sort of this ability to have those channels work together, right? How do we sort of understand what's the best channel for a specific type of message or use case or the preference of the end user and making that easy for the marketer to use the best channel. And then underneath that, capturing all of that data, you know, about what the users are doing and how they prefer to use the system. And then using some AI to provide guidance back to the marketer about things like frequency and time to send and best channel and that sort of thing. So that's kind of been a lot of how we've evolved. And now we've got, you know, this really broad multi-channel, you know, offering, and it's all really about tying in those channels, being adaptable, tying into the existing infrastructure, right? We know we're not going to come in and just people have systems in place. So coming, being monolithic and saying we're going to do every channel is, I think, doing a disservice to our customers. We really come in and say, hey, man, what have you got? If you've got an existing email system, sure, we'll tie into that. You want to take the data out and put it in Tableau? Great. You want to use it to tie into Salesforce and trigger pushes from inside their journey builder? Great. Like, you know, so we really, I think, all along have architected to be very, you know, take advantage of the fact that we're in a larger ecosystem rather than trying to fight against it and sort of try to create an IT land grab.
Yeah.
So I, you know, all along, I think that's kind of been the underlying philosophy, and it's served us really well, going from sort of the leaders in one channel to now really being positioned to help companies, you know, interact with customers in a value added way in real time. You know, taking context and personal preference and those types of social and you know, security boundaries into account.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great kind of lesson for our listeners in terms of building things that are adaptable. Now, sticking with that theme of adaptability. But projecting forward, I'm wondering kind of what's next. So is there any kind of expansion on the horizon that you can talk about, whether it be vertical expansion? You know, you mentioned some of the verticals you work with, which are travel, weather, media. You know, is the platform particularly conducive to kind of others that you want to expand into?
Sure.
And then second, not just verticals, but the capabilities themselves. Like you mentioned, in the company's long career, it has done push notifications and then also getting into other areas. Are there still kind of things on that list?
Yeah. Oh, well, the verticals are, that's the hardest part for me and my team, honestly, is
prioritizing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we have so many good, like every, you know, you mentioned a few of our key, you know, areas of travel and you know, retail and so forth. But we're getting like more and more traction, like out of, you know, hotel and hospitality. Quick service restaurants are a huge thing for us right now. Airlines, obviously, I think are a pretty dominant player in those sorts of things. But all of these, you know, and even now CPG, like direct product companies, want to do a lot of their own outreach. You know, and reach out to customers past the distribution and build relationships directly. So some, you know, actual brand manufacturers are becoming a pretty lively market. So for us, it's really a matter of, okay, you know, what are we going to prioritize and really, you know, proactively go after versus plenty of other stuff, which, again, due to the adaptability of the platform, we can service a lot of different use cases very, very well. But it's really from a marketing perspective, there's only so many targets that I can go after, you know, really aggressively in terms of, you know, demand gen and awareness and so forth. So we're constantly sort of evaluating, you know, from our core, there are many vectors for growth, and which ones do we think are really going to be the best for us to go after. So that's an ongoing fun discussion, and it's definitely better than feeling trapped in one area.
Sure.
Because I've definitely in my life and various consulting engagements worked with the other side of the problem, and this one's much more fun.
Right.
But purely, I guess, you know, from a product standpoint, really, you know, what we're doing, I think, is a couple things. One is this, you know, what's really a challenge is there are so many channels and that you can use to reach out to customers. And the reality is, in a lot of cases, that these channels, and especially in larger organizations, are owned by different groups across the company. And so what you end up with is a lot of times that if you're the end customer, the experience, you know, what you get on an email versus a push versus something, you know, an app functionality and whatever is completely disjointed. And the experience is pretty poor when those things aren't tied together. So we're really looking at how do we create, you know, a really cohesive experience across those channels. And that takes, you know, a lot of tying together data, trying to tie, you know, silos together, but also working on a couple things. One is that ability to very easily create, you know, cross-channel campaigns and for the marketer to really, you know, decide which channels are going to be most appropriate for a certain context or a certain profile, and make that process easier of sort of cross-channel orchestration. But also really investing in making people smarter, because you sit there and it's funny, you talk to marketers that are doing this and it's hard to know like what day or time, if I'm scheduling a notification, what's the right frequency, what's the right time or place, because everybody has an innate sense that, you know, you can probably impact open rates and impressions by 7, 8, 9, 10% based on when you send it, but nobody really knows exactly what that time is.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, so we do a lot of work with, you know, we've got a massive data set with the customers we have, so we can kind of go through and say like, hey, looking at, you know, send times, and we can look through and say, you know what, it's best to send it at this time of day or at this frequency, or and then we're working on much more sort of ability to guide people to what channel is most effective for different types of communication and different types of media and so forth. And we're, you know, continuing to build in new types of channels. I think right now we're, you know, looking at a lot of stuff. One of the things that's really exciting, a lot of stuff that people are doing with Wallet in terms of like event ticketing. It's not just airline boarding passes. It's like, okay, why do we have physical tickets for events, right? Because then you go in and you go to your concert or whatever and you've got a boarding. Now we can give push notifications for, hey, you know, all the t-shirts are almost sold out. Or those
And millennials hate cash, as we know.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've got, I mean, so why would you, I don't get it. Like, why would you have a paper ticket? It's like, it's one of those things that I think, like, I think we've seen it at the airport. Like, now everybody uses. I mean, that just, it fell over in, like, a year's time. Yeah. Where we went from a couple people using their phone to now if you've got a printed ticket, it just looks really weird. Right? you know, so I think we'll see the same thing, you know, happen. Why not, you know, student body cards? Why do you still have a physical card at college? Like, yeah. Why not have that on your phone? Why do you have a library card? Why do you have an insurance card? Like, why don't I just go to a doctor and they scan a UPC code? And all of my stuff auto-populates, and I don't have to fill out that damn clipboard every time,
yeah.
Right? Right. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff there, and we're really innovating on that wallet. And another thing I think is really interesting that's coming up is RCS, so Rich Communication Services, which is sort of the next generation of text. And text is amazing in terms of its, you know, open rate, like. You send a text to people and over 80% of people will read it. So it's, you know, which, and it's of course also highly regulated for that reason. Mm-hmm. So that's something we have to work with our customers on. But the next version of this, it's like going to be incredibly rich, you know, video, motion, interactive stuff that you can do, you know, through an RCS channel, and that, you know, for marketers, is going to completely change the game as a new way to reach out to folks with a very rich, you know, interesting targeted experience. And so that's something we just had a really great pilot actually with Vodafone in Europe on RCS, and they saw, you know, they ran these campaigns and saw 40% click through rates.
Wow.
On the RCS stuff. And it's great. And then, of course, it leveraged for folks that couldn't receive RCS. It fell back to our SMS, right? So everybody got coverage. So that's kind of the power of having all these different channels, is you can be, you know, a lot more comprehensive in terms of your strategies and thinking about how the channels work together and, you know, taking preferences into account and that sort of thing. So there's a lot to think about when you're doing mobile and digital marketing. And we're just basically trying to make it easier to orchestrate those campaigns across all these channels, and apply intelligence to the decisions about how they're designed going forward.
So you also just acquired a company called Accent Age. How does that map, briefly before we go to our next break, does that kind of map to some of that capability expansion you just talked about?
Well, so it's great. So they have, Accent Gauge was a perfect sort of fit for us. They were, you know, really our biggest competitor in Europe. And they are, you know, have an incredibly strong customer base across continental Europe and southern Europe. And we've been really, really strong traditionally in the Nordics and in the UK. And, you know, neither of us could cross the English Channel because we were both kind of had a strong, you know, strong market presence. And so now we've joined and now we've just got more technology. You know, it's not just sales, it's, you know, sales, service and technology being developed there in Europe at a local level. And we've now got much more of a footprint there than anybody.
The Vodafone example speaks to that.
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many, like BBC and Vodafone and Adidas, and we've got so many great clients there that we've been working with for a long time.
It's great. So we're actually going to pause there for another commercial break. When we come back, more with Mike Stone. Hi, everyone. This is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Mike Stone. So Mike, you were talking about before the break, lots of interesting stuff of what's happening at Airship these days, recent acquisition, lots of expansion into Europe, lots of expansion of capabilities and verticals, a lot of exciting things happening. Another thing on that list is Airship just went through a major rebrand from the longstanding Urban Airship that most people had known it as. So a couple questions. What was the rationale? How is it working so far? Any advice to other companies that are either considering or undergoing rebrands?
That's a lot to unpack. So, kind of the story behind it. I think it was, so first off, you know, it was a sort of a tough call to make. I sort of liked the name Urban Airship. You know, it's kind of an interesting, quirky, memorable, kind of name. And obviously there's a lot of, you know, cachet in it within our markets. We're, you know, well-respected, been around a long time. So we didn't want to, you know, completely move away from that heritage. It wasn't one of these things where we felt like we had a bad name or we, you know, really needed to move away from some bad history or anything like that. It was, we really were wanting to signal to the market that our offering was was radically different than it has been in the past. That, again, you know, instead of just, you know, and we're proud of our heritage and sustained leadership with push notifications, obviously, but we've become a much more strategic partner with our customers in terms of the expertise we can provide, but also just, as we said, we're really helping people, you know, reach out to customers in real time in a really targeted way across channels. It's far more than push notifications. It's mm-hmm. all of those channels and tying them together. So to me, I love where we landed. Yeah. That's a bad metaphor. For
yeah, air. There you go. Another lots of puns spinning out of this
oh,
episode.
Oh yeah, there's tons of it. But yeah, you know, and it never helps to go, you know, start with A and go to the top of all the alphabetical sponsors.
There you go. Yeah.
So we jump from the bottom to the top of every sponsorship list we've ever been on. So that doesn't hurt.
Yeah. And in my past, you know, covering the local space in general for a number of years, that was in the early years about Yellow Pages. And the tactic there often from Yellow Pages advertisers was they would actually name their company in a way to show up first in the Yellow Pages, you know, AAA Pizza, you know.
Yep, doesn't help after yeah. after a decade of being at the absolute bottom. There's not a lot of companies below you.
Yeah, there you go.
So
nice.
So it was a like 100% improvement. But yeah, so that was, you know, so it was great to go through, and then the whole process was really, it was super. It was a lot of fun. It was really, really comprehensive. So it was a big project, like yeah. You know, all on the same day, like. New logo, new name, new website, everybody's email address changed. Everybody got new business cards. We painted the office. We, you know, changed the internal signage.
Yeah. I've been through that. It's all kinds of things. It's website redirects. Oh, it's SEO. It's there's
everything.
Just, yeah, there's so much to it. It's well, that's
we
impressive.
We changed the product UI. We yeah. changed all the partner portal reskin. I mean, just every single aspect of internal and external touch point really flipped within, you know, 24 hours.
Yeah. Nice case study for anyone listening that is going to be undergoing a rebrand anytime soon. So that's great. So let's move into our lightning round. You know, mm-hmm. quick questions, quick answers to find out a little bit more about
yeah.
you. So first off, what's something about you that few people know about?
What did I say? It's one point I remember writing an entrance essay to something and describing I was both an Eagle Scout and a deadhead.
Nice.
So that was kind of a funny combination growing up. I'd say that probably qualifies. I also seriously like storm chasing, so I've gone on a few like tornado chasing trips across the middle of the country.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting stuff.
So second, what is a profession that you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you do now?
Probably photography.
Nice.
Yeah, I like, you know, that creative bent, mm-hmm. photography or teaching, one of those two, or, you know, which is kind of what I hope to do when I get, you know, get made another decade of this, and then, you know, hopefully still have enough energy to do some teaching and some photography. I really enjoy, doing both of those things.
That answer also resonates with me. I've been an amateur photographer since college, and it's one thing I love about it is it's the perfect combination of right brain and left brain. It's a creative medium, of course, but there's also a lot of mechanics to it.
There's a lot of science. Yep.
Yeah, and I love that. And it, you know, I geek out on just buying all kinds of gear. I spend way too much on all that stuff.
I know. Yeah, that's been. But it's nice because it gives my wife a you know, a good thing to like give, you know, okay, Christmas, I'll have another lens. Like, it's just kind of built in.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I have like a fallback career if everything goes to crap. You know, I could do headshots, or, you know, something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. No, yeah. I've done more than a few people's headshots.
I do headshots for friends career. All the time, just for free.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, what's a company or tech startup that you think would be most exciting to be a part of at early stages? I mean, you're a Silicon Valley guy.
Yeah.
You know, what's the company that you think would be most fun to just be part of that like original team, moment of inception?
God, there's so many things. I don't know. It's kind of old school, but I'm going to go Google Earth.
Nice. Yeah. John Hankey and company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how fun is that? Right. I mean, thinking about all the things.
It was Keyhole, right? It was a Keyhole that Google acquired that became Google Maps.
That started. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, the Google Earth thing too. Google Maps is probably like, that's probably my favorite app.
Yeah.
I just use it all the time for everything. And as they add more and more things to it, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I think. I think kind of spatially. So,
yep.
Like, have, you know, going through and using proximity as an index for finding things and
sure.
so forth. It works well for me. So, But I'll sit there, and I think just Google Earth's a fun way to kind of virtually travel and check things out. And then the Maps project as an app offshoot of that is just endless possibilities.
Yeah, well, you've probably seen their kind of AR overlaid graphics for 3D. Hold your phone up and get kind of spatially arranged directions as opposed to like mentally translating the downward facing 2D blue dot to like what direction to walk. It's just so much more intuitive.
Oh, exactly. And it sort of took off. I remember when the first sort of astronomy apps came out, sort of the stargazing ones where you can kind of hold your phone up and it shows you the names of the stars that are right behind it. Like it takes that kind of technology and applies it to something that's a little less esoteric.
Yeah. And that gets back to your earlier point about, you know, predicting the touch points, and there's just all kinds of the pace of innovation is accelerating. So that kind of AR interface could be something that in certain use cases, whether it be navigation or education or entertainment or gaming, I've been looking at that a lot. Who is someone from the business world that you admire most and would want to have lunch with or drink with?
Yeah, sure. I've had a couple of folks that I've had some proximity with in my career that I've just been impressed with how down earth, like Dave Duffield, I think, Parker Harris at Salesforce, just like amazing skills, great leaders, and just really unassuming, nice people, you know, that just like are not, you know, don't have a whole lot of, they're not difficult to meet. And I think they really lead in the right way and are great to interact with. I think are, you know, and obviously have accomplished a great deal. As far as just pure, like, whoa, impressive. I've been fortunate, you know, with 4 years at Salesforce to be up close and personal with Mark Benioff and a number of big decisions. And I just have never seen anybody who can process more information quickly, kind of come down to the root problem and drive a room towards resolution. It's amazing.
He's a force of nature. Absolutely.
And it's just amazing to watch. Like you sit there, he can drill down exactly to, you know, the key element that needs to be discussed. And then he always, you know, obviously never has any hesitation to take that and put it out on the table and drive a decision. And it's really why that company historically has executed so well, I think, is that whole ability to process a great deal of complex information and find the most salient point and get people acting very quickly against it. And it's just, it is something to see in real life.
Yeah. And then lastly, what are some of your personal goals for the remainder of 2019?
I got a couple of teenage kids, you know, so it's kind of I'm really cognizant of that they're only going to be living with us for so much longer. So really making sure that I'm very, I don't get to the end of the year and say, crap, I should have made more time and set aside more time. So being very thoughtful about that. And I got to go see more live music. The number of concerts I've seen per month has dropped precipitously in the past year. And it's not good for my general well-being.
Yeah,
so I need more live music and making sure I commit to time with my kids. I think that's the personal goals.
Those are good ones. So that's actually all the time we have. So I want to thank you, Mike, for spending time with us.
You bet. No, this is great. Nice to meet you, Mike.
Yeah, this has been fun.
We have quite a bit in common.
I guess so, yeah. We discover all kinds of new things on this show. So thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and also stay tuned for more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening. We'll